And when you're ready, in your own time, at your own pace, you can gently and softly open your eyes. Part 4. Connection. Learning to love everyone. The fourth ashram, sannyas, is when we extend our love to each and every person and area of our life. In this stage, our love becomes boundless. We realize we can experience love at any time with anyone. We feel karuna, compassion for all living entities. All of these stages can all be lived simultaneously, but this fourth stage is the highest expression of love. Rule 8. Love again and again. The river that flows in you also flows in me. Kabir Das. At the ashram, I heard a story in which a teacher asks a student, "If you had $100 to give, would it be better to give it all to one person or to give $1 each to 100 different people?" The student looks unsure. "If I give it all to one person, it might be enough to change their life. But if I give it to 100 hungry people, they might be all able to eat something." "Both of these are true," the teacher says. "But the more people you help, the more you expand your capacity for love." We begin our love lives with the idea that we should give the metaphorical $100 to one person, our partner, or to a few, our family. But in the fourth stage of life, we change our approach. We start handing out single dollar bills to many people. The more we can give, the better. But we start small and over time, grow our capacity to give love. The way you perfect love is not by waiting to find or have it, but by creating it with everyone all the time. This is what I've been waiting to tell you. It's the greatest gift that love has to offer. You probably came to this book wondering how to find or keep love with a partner. We want love in our lives, and we naturally assume it should take the form of romantic love. But it's a misconception that the only love in your life is between you and your partner, your family, and your friends. It's a misconception that life is meant to be a love story between you and one other person. That love is just a stepping stone. Having a partner isn't the end goal. It's practice for something bigger, something life-changing, a form of love that is even more expansive and rewarding than romantic love. Our partnerships give us a chance to practice for it, but we don't have to fulfill our romantic desires to get there. It's available to all of us every day, and it is infinite. In the fourth stage of life, sannyas, the goal is simply this: to look beyond the self to how we can serve others. To experience love constantly by choosing to give it to others always. To find love in moments of frustration, annoyance, anger, and dismay when it seems out of reach. To create more loving connections with every person we meet. To feel love for all humanity. Love means noticing that everyone is worthy of love, and treating them with the respect and dignity their humanity automatically makes them deserve. Norwegian philosopher Arne Naas borrowed from Vedic ideas when he described a process of self-realization, where the self to be realized extends further and further beyond the separate ego, and includes more and more of the phenomenal world. In other words, when we widen and deepen our sense of self, we see our interconnectedness. So serving others serves the self. There is no difference. For those who reach the fourth stage of life, the body, mind, and soul are dedicated to serving the divine and uplifting humanity. Sannyasis experience the depths and nuances of love that we can't always find in any one person. We come to appreciate love in different forms. We no longer serve out of a sense of moral duty, but out of an understanding of our oneness with all that is. We are connected, and when we serve others, we're serving ourselves. Science supports this concept. Psychologists refer to things we do to help others as pro-social behavior. Mariana Pogosyan, who specializes in cross-cultural psychology, writes that pro-social behavior helps us feel more connected to others, and this desire for connection is one of our deepest psychological needs. The sannyasi serves as many people as possible. Why limit love to one person or one family? Why experience love only with a few people? When we expand our radius of love, we have the opportunity to experience love every day, at every moment. When you think this way, love stretches its arms wider and wider. If a parent loves their children, they love the other children who surround them at school because they care about the community their own children experience. And if you care about the community, then you care about the school itself. And if you care about the school, then you care about the ground where it sits. This is why if you love your kids, you should want to better their world and the world at large. Loving those around us teaches us to love each living entity, and loving everyone teaches us to love the world around us, the place they call home. And if we love the environment, then we love its creator, the divine, a power beyond ourselves. When Kabir Das, the 15th century Indian poet and saint, wrote, "The river that flows in you also flows in me," he was suggesting that we're connected to all humanity through our actions, words, behaviors, and breath. We impact one another in all we do. We saw this during the pandemic when it was important to take care of one another, to protect one another, to look beyond our loved ones, to consider the whole community. Anne Frank said, "No one has ever become poor by giving. By gradually broadening our concept of love, we begin to see new ways to access it. Love is available whenever you want to feel it by giving it to others." Giving love solves a human need that is even greater than romantic love. I need to be of service. There is no greater ecstasy than that. I like the Chinese proverb that advises, if you want happiness for an hour, take a nap. If you want happiness for a day, go fishing. If you want happiness for a year, inherit a fortune. If you want happiness for a lifetime, help someone else. The joy we feel from serving others has been labeled the helper's high or giver's glow, defined by scientists as a feeling following selfless service to others of elation, exhilaration, and increased energy, then a period of calm and serenity. Researcher Alan Lukes, author of The Healing Power of Doing Good, looked at data from more than 3,000 people who had volunteered and noted that helper's high not only endured for several weeks of service, it came back when people simply recalled their service. And helper's high doesn't just feel good in our brains. It's accompanied by lower levels of stress hormones and improved immune system function. Instead of expecting love, we have to find ways of expressing love. We've been taught to believe that the only way you can experience love is when you receive it. But the Vedas say you can feel love anytime you want simply by connecting with the love that is always within you. In the Vedic point of view, we don't need to find love, build love, or create love. We are wired to love and be loving. The Vedas say the soul is Sat Chit Ananda, eternal, full of knowledge, full of bliss. This is our loving core. As we experience the world, this core is covered by layers of ego, envy, pride, jealousy, lust, and illusion that get in the way of our ability to love. We have to work to remove these layers and return to our most loving selves. This is how the Vedas would see even the most evil and dangerous members of society. The love at their core is utterly obscured by layers of impurity. We all have impurities, but in most of us they are small and relatively harmless, whereas a leader whose loving core is fully covered can use their scale and influence for the destruction of life. A sannyasi is able to look at each person's behavior and actions and see them as opportunities to respond with love, no matter how inaccessible that core of love is. They do this, of course, without risking life and limb, without lending support to the corrupt leader's cause. How to give love. In the fourth stage of life, we come to a point where we're not just looking for love in one person anymore. This may be because we find ourselves without a partner, or we may be happy with our partner and feeling like we now have enough love to expand it. You've been a student of love, and now you're a steward of love. The Bhagavad Gita talks about the principles of Shreyas and Prayas, which roughly translates to what we seek and what we ought to seek. If we have the capacity and opportunity to look beyond our own needs, then we should do so. You have been striving to fulfill your own purpose. Perhaps you have been striving to fulfill the goals of a partner and children. Now you can set the goal of service. If you have a partner, you deepen your love for each other by doing this together. Embarking on these efforts prematurely leads to arguments and misunderstandings. By the time you start thinking about ways to serve others together, your community, the world, you need to deeply understand each other's strengths and weaknesses. Once we understand that in ourselves and others, collaboration comes more easily, and we can extend that compassion to everyone. Being a sannyasi is hard work. Without practice, we are not necessarily ready for this infinite expansion of love. It can easily slip into the desire to feed one's ego by people-pleasing. And the further we get in time and space from those we know and love, the harder it is to feel love. Jamil Zaki, a Stanford professor of psychology and director of the Stanford Social Neuroscience Laboratory, writes, "Empathy is also ancient. Tuned to a time when we lived in small groups of hunter-gatherers. Much as we did back then, we still find it easier to care for people who look or think like us, who are familiar, and who are right in front of us." Zaki is describing why we as a global community struggle to address climate change. He says, "People feel strong empathy after hearing about one victim of a disaster, whose face we can see and whose cries we can hear. But hearing about hundreds or thousands of victims leaves us unmoved. Such compassion collapse stymies climate action. Yet, as Rumi says, I, you, he, she, we, in the garden of mystic lovers, these are not true distinctions. Although it's not hard to imagine a peaceful world full of love, it may not be obvious how we can make it so this afternoon, and tomorrow, and every day. Rumi suggests that we are not as separate from others as we think we are. Distinctions exist, but with practice, we can broaden our spectrum of love from the personal to the professional to the community to the planet. The Bhagavad Gita puts it simply, "The humble sage, by virtue of true knowledge, sees with equal vision a learned and gentle Brahmana, a cow, an elephant, a dog." Love those closest to you. We first expand our circle of love to those who are easiest to love. We can show love to our friends and family, not just through what we say or do. Behind those acts are four key qualities. 1. Understanding. All of us want to be understood. To love your nearest and dearest is to try to understand who they are and what they are trying to achieve. We do this by listening and asking questions rather than pushing our ideas and agendas. 2. Belief. Our friends and family want us to believe in them. This means believing that they have the potential to achieve their dreams. When someone you love shares an idea, give positive feedback. Be supportive and encouraging. 3. Acceptance. Our friends and family want to be accepted and loved just the way they are, for who they are, with all their flaws and differences. We don't project our expectations of what they should do or how they should act onto them. 4. Appreciation. We give love through appreciating the little and big things our friends and family do, the struggles they face, the efforts and changes they make, the energy they bring to the relationship. We think that merely being present is showing enough appreciation, but I can't think of anyone who doesn't want to be told with specificity and sincerity what they have done well. A radius of respect. Sometimes there are challenges in loving those who are closest to us. The person doesn't respond in a positive way. They're difficult to deal with, but we still care for them and want to continue to love them. When someone is toxic, we can love them from a radius of respect. The psychologist Russell Barkley said, "The children who need the most love will always ask for it in the most unloving ways." It's hard to accept that someone does something hurtful because they're seeking love. We don't accept abuse, but we understand that a person causes pain because they're in pain. They're trying to offload their pain onto you. Like a child who might scream, cry, shout, or throw a tantrum in order to get attention, the behaviors we see in others are misdirected pleas for love. It's not uncommon to have a friend or family member whom you consider to be difficult or toxic. Spending time with them, you face a negative environment where your ideas are shunned, your voice isn't heard, or where you feel rejected or neglected. If you find yourself in a situation like this, it can be easy to turn from loving thoughts to negative, hurtful, hateful thoughts. Don't feel guilty or bad for this. It's natural to feel upset if someone is treating you unfairly. Our difficult loved ones are in our lives to teach us tolerance. Meet people with love, even when they don't meet you with love. A sannyasi offers love to everyone the same way a doctor tries to heal people on both sides of a fight, no matter who started it. Don't compromise your values and don't accept abuse, but stretch your capacity to give love. When we encounter someone whom we find difficult to be around, the first step toward loving them is to understand what, if anything, our reaction to them reveals about ourselves. Is it our own insecurity? Is it our ego? Is it fear? If you're waiting and wishing for your friends or family to agree with you, cheer you on, and encourage every idea you have and every decision you make, that's a lot to ask. For better and worse, they can't help but project their limited viewpoint, with all their own doubts and fears, onto you. When their response to you upsets or worries you, consider whether part of your reaction comes from your own lack of confidence about the decision you're making. Instead of spending energy trying to gain their confidence, focus on building your own in solitude. When you accept who you are and what you want, you're less likely to be triggered by someone else's opinion of you or perception of your ideas. When we broaden our scope of love, we're not excluding people for what they do or how they act, unless they're abusive. We love them because we want to be loving people. If you like a clean house, you keep it clean whether you have guests or not. It makes it a more pleasant place for you to live. The same is true when you create a loving environment in your heart. You do it for yourself, no matter who receives or returns it. You don't mess your house up if someone messy comes in. You don't fill your heart with hate because someone hateful enters your radius. You want to live in a house of love. That said, we can't love everyone from the same vantage point. We may try to love certain people up close, but find that every time we leave them, we complain about their negativity, bitterness, and energy. It's better to stand at the distance, where we can still respect and support them, than to be too close and have our resentment grow. If you have a difficult family member that you want to keep in your life, this might mean you love them best when you see them once a year. It might mean keeping all contact to phone calls rather than in-person visits. Deal with them for whatever amount of time you can handle. The distance protects you from feeling used and allows you to be a well-wisher from afar until you're ready to love them up close. It gives you the space and opportunity to develop strength and confidence in solitude. And, potentially, in the long run, you'll be able to return with compassion to help them on their journey. One way of giving love to a difficult person is to find other sources of love for them. Sometimes we think we are their sole source of love, and maybe that's the situation that has evolved. But this dependence isn't beneficial for either person. We may not have the time, inclination, ability, or even patience to take on a difficult person as a full-time project. That's okay. We don't have to be saviors. Loving such a person can, and perhaps should, mean pivoting away from the one-on-one love that we've been focusing on till now. We might not be the best or only person to love them. After all, we want them to be surrounded by love, and we want them, too, to have the opportunity to spread more love. Try this. Help a difficult family member find love in their community. If it's hard to love a friend or family member up close, you can include them in your circle of love by helping them find other sources of love. Find them new friends. Introduce them to like-minded people. Ask your friends if they have contacts who live in the same area and might get along with the person. Find them services. Connect them with a spiritual community, local gym, or arrange for a service that helps with the chore they can't or don't like to do. Help them pursue their interests. We can help a lonely parent start a book club or plan a poker tournament. Arrange for a family event on neutral ground. Being in public tends to ease tensions and improve everyone's behavior. If visiting at home is too intense, try meeting at a restaurant or at a public space where you both feel comfortable. Write them a letter of appreciation. Share any fond memories you have with them. Let them know what you admire about them, and let them know any positive ways in which they've made a difference in your life. If you make efforts like the ones I just mentioned, but still can't find ways to love them, don't force yourself to do it. Sometimes the best thing you can do for a once important friend or family member is to step away from them. Sometimes that's all you can do. This can be difficult. We feel uncertain about giving up on someone who is or has been important to us. Part of what makes this hard is that we know instinctively that the Vedas are right. There is goodness in this person's soul, obscured as it is by the layers of bad experiences, negative emotions, even trauma. It is easier to create the distance we need if we let go with love. Just as you wouldn't judge someone for the clothes they wear, don't judge them for the external. Try to love someone for the spark in them, not what surrounds them. A conscious commitment of time. Giving love to our friends and family requires time, but we're all so busy and distracted that we can have trouble finding the time. The solution to this problem is organization. British anthropologist Robin Dunbar hypothesized that brains can only handle a certain sized social group. And after looking at historical, anthropological, and current data, he and his colleagues determined the number to be about 150. An article on BBC.com adds, according to the theory, the tightest circle has just 5 people, loved ones. That's followed by successive layers of 15, good friends, 50, friends, 150, meaningful contacts, 500, acquaintances, and 1500, people you can recognize. People migrate in and out of these layers, but the idea is that space has to be carved out for any new entrants. Though these numbers are just averages, if you categorize your personal contacts this way, you can be much more deliberate about how to divide your time among them. Instead of passively giving your presence to anyone who reaches out to you, you can consciously decide whom you want to see and how often. Try this. Structure your list of loved ones. Make a list of your larger circle of friends and family. Using your social media lists of friends or followers is one way to start. Facebook and Instagram allow you to categorize your friends to what level of online information they receive. Now do the same thing in real life. Organize this list into close friends and family, good friends and family, meaningful contacts, and acquaintances. Decide how much time you can give to each category. Maybe you will decide that you want to check in or make plans with close friends and family once a week, and good friends once a month. Perhaps you want to make an effort to touch base with meaningful contacts every quarter, and acquaintances once a year. This breakdown enables you to be conscious about how you want to divide your time and helps you communicate this to your circle. You can say, "I'd love to make sure we have lunch once a month." Though it would be odd to tell your meaningful contacts that you've assigned them a quarterly frequency, having it in your head that you see them every season, perhaps around holidays, will keep you in touch and aware of what's going on in their life. If you have trouble making friends, or you've recently moved and are starting fresh, this list can remind you of the people you cherish. Are there distant family members or acquaintances you want to build into closer relationships? Having a working list of those who interest you and who you care about will help you build a network. Appreciate your colleagues. It's not uncommon to spend more time with our colleagues than with our family. Our workplace is as much a community as any other we inhabit. The person in the mailroom, the IT savior, the guard downstairs, the marketing guru, and the colleagues we're actually close to. These are the main people we see every day, working at our sides or in a little box on our Zoom screen. But it's not intuitive to show love for them, nor is it clear how to do it. We feel inhibited from loving our colleagues because of the formality of a professional environment. Love in the work world looks different. It's not deep. It's often not emotional. You may not share a level of trust that allows you to be very personal or vulnerable. In fact, connecting on a personal level may not be appropriate or suitable to your work culture. We overcome this by finding ways to inject appreciation and warmth into an office environment. We love our juniors, peers, and seniors in different ways. We love our juniors through guidance and mentorship, not control and ownership. Serving cake for every birthday isn't the only way to show love in the office. We connect them to knowledge and wisdom that gives them access to personal growth. When we can, we provide mentorship or access to ideas and insights that aren't available in their day-to-day work life. Can you bring in a guest lecturer, or share a TED talk on meditation, or organize a charity run that colleagues can do together? We look for new and creative ways to show our appreciation for juniors' dedication to their work. Blueboard is a company that takes the idea of appreciating employees to heart. One of the founders, Kevin Yip, says he got the idea for the company when his boss thanked him for working on a project, 7 days a week for 12 to 15-hour days, by putting an American Express gift card on his desk. Blueboard enables employers to show their appreciation for employees through all kinds of experiences, like going to a zero-gravity float tank, learning about cheese from a cheesemonger, seeing the Northern Lights, or using heavy machinery to have an extreme sandbox adventure. When we recognize what someone did, we appreciate who they are. According to Work.com, nearly half of employees said they would switch jobs just to feel more appreciated. We love our peers through support, encouragement, collaboration, cooperation, and appreciation. The loving qualities we bring to work echo those we bring to our friends and family, but they shift slightly to reflect the need to be professional and productive. Try this. Bring love to work. 1. Understanding. You don't need to understand who they are and what they want to the extent you do with your closest friends and family, but take interest in their personal lives and follow up on the highs and lows, especially taking care when they have good reason to be distracted from work and need extra support from you. Check in with colleagues if their mood shifts. Follow up on challenges you know they're facing. If they're going through a rough period, see if there's a way you can support them by taking on more work or otherwise finding ways to lighten their load. Notice the effort they put into their work, when they do a good job and how they improve, and celebrate their success. 2. Connection. Whether online or in person, start your day or a meeting by checking in with your colleague. Try to get a read on how their day is going. Follow up on personal issues that they've shared with you. Humanize the experience instead of diving right into an agenda. 3. Appreciation. Every day, choose one person from your professional life to send a brief message by voicemail, text, or email, commending them or thanking them specifically for something they did at work. Make these efforts because you want to bring more love into the world without expecting or demanding reciprocation from your coworkers. We love our seniors by following through on what we've signed up to do, being respectful and holding on to our boundaries. We actively accept guidance instead of resenting it. The Crocodile and the Monkey. There's a Zen story about a monkey who sees a banana that he wants across a river. The crocodile, observing the monkey's desire, offers to carry him across the river. The monkey readily jumps on his back and the crocodile begins to swim across. In the middle of the river, however, he stops and says, "Stupid monkey, now you're stuck on my back in the middle of the river and I'm about to eat you." The monkey smartens up quickly and says, "Well, crocodile, I'd love for you to eat me, but I left my heart on the other riverbank, and that's the tastiest part of me. It's juicy and rich, a real delicacy. I wouldn't want you to have a less satisfying meal." The crocodile says, "Oh, that does sound tasty. All right then, I'll swim to the other bank so you can bring me your heart." They arrive at the far bank and the monkey runs off, saving his own life. The point of this story is that when you're dealing with crocodiles, you should leave your heart at home. You can't always be vulnerable. Sometimes it will be used against you. If you love unconditionally in a professional context, it may take people off guard. They're used to being motivated by fear or results, but not love. It's an alien experience, and people may not respond well to it. We think of love as reciprocal, but sannyasis love without reciprocation. We must hold on to our loving hearts, the essence of who we are, even in a workplace full of crocodiles. We try to be compassionate to those who have hurt us. We give the best energy we can under the circumstances and get on with our lives. At the same time, we make sure that we ourselves are not the crocodile, because what we become at work bleeds into who we are at home. If you can't be the sannyasi you want to be at work, make sure that you strive to give love in your personal life. Be proactive in your community. When we look to expand our love beyond our workplace, we reach out to the communities we're part of. Neighborhood groups, school committees, religious institutions, book clubs, and other interest groups. We show love in our communities by noticing a need and working to fulfill it. This might be starting a neighborhood watch, or helping solve an infrastructure issue, or organizing ways for neighbors to meet and socialize. If this is done for power, authority, or control, it will leave us feeling empty. But if we make these efforts from a position of love, compassion, and empathy, they will fulfill us. As you scale your love, you will encounter dissent. The more people you serve, the more will disagree with you. If you're on a neighborhood watch group, there might be one or two people who don't like your ideas. If you're on the city council, as you do an increasing amount of work in the community, more people will dislike or disagree with you. If you're the president of the United States, nearly half the country will be against you. If you find yourself dealing with more conflicting opinions, recognize that they're proportionate to the journey you're on. Inspire strangers. We encounter strangers on the street with a certain level of caution, and rightly so. We have no idea if they are receptive to love or how to show love without making them uncomfortable. Yet we see people who are not related to us every day whenever we leave our houses. Many of us spend the majority of our time by far in the presence of people who don't even know our names. The bus driver, a cashier, a waiter, the person behind us in line. The easiest and safest way for us to give love to the people who cross our path is to smile. Thanks to our survival circuitry, our brains are constantly scanning for cues as to whether we're welcome in our surroundings. Scientists say that when we smile at someone, it signals social connection, putting them more at ease. Purdue University researchers wanted to investigate the extent to which a split-second interaction with a stranger can impact us. A research assistant walked a busy path on campus, and as they passed strangers, either made eye contact with them, made eye contact and smiled, or looked right through them, as if they didn't exist. Then, just a few steps later, the unknowing study subjects were stopped by another researcher, this one asking if they'd mind taking a brief survey. Those who were ignored reported feeling more social disconnection than those who had received some form of positive acknowledgement. The researchers concluded that being obviously ignored, even by strangers, can have a negative impact on us. The reason might be purely chemical, that when we're ignored, we're missing the positive impact of smiles. Smiling releases dopamine, serotonin, and endorphins, the feel-good neurotransmitters, which lift our mood. And countless studies back up what most of us have known our whole lives. Smiling is contagious. So if you smile and someone returns it, you're both benefiting from your feel-good hormones. If we truly care about the strangers around us, their lives can be transformed. According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, roughly 70% of service doesn't involve a formal organization, but entails people engaging locally on their own initiative. Think of the little free libraries and little free pantries people create in their communities to distribute books and food. Countless anonymous donors stop by to restock the reading material or food in these mini libraries and food banks. Then there are the folks who see a need and simply take matters into their own hands. On a cold November night in New York City, a homeless man walked barefoot down the sidewalk on his heels, trying to protect his toes from the freezing ground. New York City police officer Lawrence DiPrimo saw the man, whom he engaged in conversation. As they chatted, DiPrimo found out the man's shoe size, then disappeared briefly. When he returned, he presented the man with a pair of weatherproof boots he had just purchased. We wouldn't know of this story except that a passerby happened to notice what was happening and snapped a photo of DiPrimo kneeling next to the man, helping him lace up the boots. And when the clerk at the shoe store had learned why DiPrimo was buying the boots, he had offered his employee discount to lower the price. That's love. Give resources to organizations. Organizations can seem impersonal, and so are the ways we're encouraged to love them. Primarily by giving money, sometimes by giving time or skills. The more emotionally connected you are to a cause, the more passion you'll be able to bring to your efforts on its behalf. Leanne Loricella had a bustling career as a corporate event planner in New York, throwing fancy affairs for wealthy clients. One day, a coworker mentioned factory farming. Leanne had no idea what the term meant, but that evening, she Googled it, and was horrified by what she found. On the spot, Leanne decided to stop eating animals. She also started learning more about animal agriculture, including visiting farms where she fell in love with the animals, especially with goats. Leanne was surprised and delighted to discover how playful, intelligent, and engaged goats are when they're treated well. She just couldn't get goats out of her mind, so she rescued two, Jax and Opie, named after characters from the TV show Sons of Anarchy. Leanne started an Instagram account she jokingly titled Goats of Anarchy, where she could share Jax and Opie's exploits. People loved engaging with them, and Leanne enjoyed caring for them, so much so that she adopted more goats, including several with special medical needs. Eventually, Leanne quit her job, and today, Goats of Anarchy is a registered charity on a 30-acre property that more than 250 animals call home. Leanne and her helpers care for the goats, and they provide educational programs and lots of smiles for the public. Connect with Earth. It's hard to show love to Earth because it's so big. We can't fix or even see every element of nature. We're not trained to believe that Earth is our home or responsibility. We think it will take care of itself, or that taking care of it is the government's job. We make Earth smaller by finding ways to connect with it. On a trip to Hawaii Volcanoes National Park, Radhi and I were shown circular petroglyphs that native Hawaiians carved into rocks hundreds of years ago. Our guide told us that when babies were born, their elders would carve these circles and place the umbilical cord there so that the child was connected to the earth forever. This connection is not only good for nature. Nature has love to give us too. Native Americans and other indigenous cultures have countless practices to honor nature, including songs and dances dedicated to water, earth, wind, and fire. Yogis practice Surya Namaskar, or sun salutations. Ancient Celts and other peoples gathered for festivals to celebrate the cycles of the seasons. Jungian analyst Eric Newman wrote, "Opposition between light and darkness has informed the spiritual world of all peoples and molded it into shape." Modern science shows that our biology is regulated by nature. Sameh Hattar, who heads the section on light and circadian rhythms at the National Institute of Mental Health, says that light impacts us beyond just helping us see. It actually regulates many of our body's functions. Neurons in our eyes set our body clocks based on information from the sun's rising and setting, and everything from our sleep-wake cycle to our metabolism and our mood is influenced by sunlight. Artificial light affects us as well, but our bodies function best when we're exposed to the bright light of the sun. As neuroscientist Andrew Huberman says, we can actually experience a kind of light hunger when we don't get enough sunlight. We already connect with Earth in more ways than we know. Learning that inspires us to take care of our planet. Make your way outward through the circles of love, starting in your comfort zone with those you know best and getting further and further from those you know personally. We serve in ignorance when we don't want to be left out. We serve out of passion when we want credit for what we've done or we want the recipient to owe us debt. We serve in goodness when we don't want recognition or an outcome. We just want to show pure love. When you started listening to this book, maybe you were hoping love would show up at your doorstep, sweep you off your feet, and carry you away. Maybe you felt willing to do anything to find love. We think love has to be obtained, earned, achieved, and received. We look for it in the form of attention and compliments and people acknowledging us. But actually, the greatest way to experience love is to give it. What if when you enter a room, you ask yourself, "How can I love everyone here today?" You tell yourself, "I'm just going to give love." This is an amazing way to start your day and to guide you through it. If someone gives off a negative or unwelcoming vibe, try going up to them and asking them a question about something they care about. It's that simple. Give love. I began this book by talking about how when we love a flower, we water it every day. Now you are the one doing the planting. Planting seeds for others, giving fruits to others, providing shade for others. You can seek love your whole life and never find it. Or you can give love your whole life and experience joy. Experience it, practice it, and create it instead of waiting for it to find you. The more you do this, the more you will experience the depths of love from different people throughout every single day for the rest of your life. Write a love letter to the world. Once I was walking on a beach in South India with one of my teachers. We were in a fishing community and many fish had been brought up to the beach in nets, but there were thousands of other fish that for some reason were stranded on the beach, slowly dying. One by one, my teacher began to throw fish back into the sea in hope that they would survive. There were so many fish on the beach, I knew we wouldn't be able to save them all. I asked him what the point was in saving them. "It's only one fish to you," my teacher said. "But to that fish, it is everything." My teacher was enacting in real life a message from a Zen story that I would later come across, about a teacher throwing starfish back into the sea. The news today is overwhelming. We see widespread pain and suffering and wonder what difference we can make. But I like to believe that if we send positive wishes and good energy out to anyone who needs them, they will reach someone and mean something to them. We underestimate what helping one person could do. Writing a love letter to the world reminds you to operate this way in all your interactions of the day. Dear world, for so much of my life, I have viewed love as caring for those who care for me. Starting with my first years, I experienced love as something I received and returned. But that experience of love, while beautiful, is limited. It restricts my experience of love to those I know, those who engage with me in a certain way. I want to experience more love, a bigger love, one not confined to my own backyard, but one that reaches out beyond the borders of my own world, into the whole world, to all of humanity. Love beyond biology or reciprocity, beyond even acquaintance. Because as I now understand, I do not need to know you to love you. Or rather, in some way, I do know you because of our shared humanity. We are all here together in this place with our struggles and triumphs, doing our best. What connects us all to one another is our connection to love. I know that sometimes it's hard to see that, divided as we are by our different opinions, values, and beliefs. But underneath it all, every single one of us has one powerful thing in common. We all want to experience love. And that's what I share with you now. No matter who you are, no matter what you've done or haven't done in your life, I offer you love. I promise you are worthy of receiving it. Please know that no matter what you're going through, someone loves you. Without reservation, without judgment. Fully and completely. Love me. Meditation to connect. This meditation focuses on noticing and sharing love in all its forms. It can help you feel more deeply connected to love and to the world around you. Find a comfortable position, whether that's sitting in a chair, sitting upright on a cushion or on the floor, or lying down. Close your eyes if that feels good to you. If not, simply soften your focus. Whether your eyes are open or closed, gently lower your gaze. Take a deep breath in and breathe out. If you find that your mind is wandering, that's okay. Gently bring it back to a space of calm, balance, and stillness. Sharing love meditation. Take a deep breath and breathe out. Take a moment to think about all the love you have received in your life. Think about all the love you have expressed and shared with others. Now, feel all the love within you, from every source, including yourself. Bring your awareness to all the love you have chosen to have within you. Notice it in your heart. Feel it cascading across your body, enlivening your feet, legs, arms, chest and head. Feel the love getting stronger and more powerful. Notice it radiating from your heart space. Now, see this love going out to the people you know and care for. See it reaching out to every person who you know is struggling. Now, feel it projected to people you've never met and the strangers you see every day. Now, feel the love within you extending even beyond that, reaching every person in the entire world. And when you're ready, in your own time, at your own pace, you can gently and softly open your eyes.
Eight Rules of Love, How to Find It, Keep It, and Let It Go, was written and read by Jay Shetty. It was recorded by Skylar Kilborn and Riley Large at Dave & Dave Studios in Burbank, California. Editing, mix, and post-production by Like 2,000 Pounds. The associate producer was Alexandra Howdyshell. Eight Rules of Love was produced and directed by Travis Tun. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio. Eight Rules of Love is available in print from Simon & Schuster. Also available from Simon & Schuster Audio. Think Like a Monk. Train Your Mind for Peace and Purpose Every Day. Written and read by Jay Shetty.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.